Touch My Monkey, Love It.
To the Fizzle Show today. We got a good one for you. You know where we're at right now. This is a podcast for community creative people. Yes, sir. People working to become self-employed. That's right. After possible 47 alligators, I give it 97 alligators. Ah, Tyrone. Come on, man. Get back in your cage. Oh, you found me. I got out. Oh, yeah, I got out. Thank you, sorry. Big time sour, welcome to the show. Yeah, you're right, welcome to the show. Hello and welcome to the Fizzle Show. Sorry about that, everyone. You know what this is? It's a podcast for a community of creative people working to become self-employed. All right, every Friday we publish another conversation about entrepreneurship, building a thriving audience around your thing, and the battle of supporting yourself doing something that you care about. Your hosts are, there are three of us. If we were impersonations, Corbett, he would be Sean Connery's James Bond. Cool, elegant, dashingly classic. Barrett would be Barry White. Deep, smooth, and ruggedly refined. And Chase, that's me. I'd be Barney Fife. High-pitched, warbly, and instantly lovable. That one comes to us from Jason Jacobs. Thanks, Jason. In this episode, we're actually missing Barrett on this one, which is a bummer. I was in San Francisco for a quick spell. Corbett and I decided to jump on the mics, and it was past Barrett's bedtime. So we decided to talk through a new guide we just made. We've worked with hundreds of entrepreneurs over the past several years, and in this episode, we showcase the top 10 mistakes that we see self-employed people make. Oh, it's going to be a good one. Got the top 10 mistakes. No one make one of them. Not if one be successful. You're right. Actually, you're right about that. Get the guide. You can get that at fizzleshow.co/80. You can download it free and follow along. In this episode, you're going to have some additional color conversation, commentary, the whole nine yards. So, fizzleshow.co/80. I'll be back after this conversation to fill in any gaps. So, let's get into it. All right, let's get on to the show. I didn't need you to add that.
Yeah.
We are young.
Harder to heartbreak, we stand. No promises, no demands. Both of us lying here. Love is a battlefield.
I'm not gonna. I'm like a world class beatboxer, but I'm not gonna try it here.
Yeah, you're like, I don't want to show you.
I'm not gonna give you all my like tips and tricks and stuff.
Have I ever done this one for you?
No,
you never have. I don't know if I ever want you to do it again because you looked straight into my eye holes and you did that. I felt that resonating. Not only are you plugged into my ears,
yeah,
straight into my brain. But then you did this demonic chanting straight into my soul.
I think that's...
Dude, that's something from like Event Horizon or something like that.
No, I think it's actually from a Vanilla Ice album. And it's stuck in my brain since I was 12.
That's still pretty dubious.
Since I was 12.
Hey, everybody. Chase and Corbett here. Barrett is... So basically, I flew into San Francisco for one day to surprise my brother for his birthday. And I can say that because... Hopefully this won't air until after that happens.
Probably not. He doesn't know you're here.
He does not
know. Look at you.
Yeah. Yeah. Under the radar, as they call it. I'm a bit of a sneaky dude. I'm a bit of a sneaky dude, ain't I?
Yep.
Isn't it?
Isn't it?
Isn't it, love?
Exactly.
Isn't it right, governor? So, flew in, sat between an older couple that they've traveled apparently together every now and again. Always buying the tickets on both.
So they don't
the aisle and the window.
Well, we've pulled that move before because the thing is,
he's backpedaling because I gave him a judgment face.
You did, but
it's
listen.
Weird. It's a weird thing.
No, listen, because here's the thing. If you book the aisle and the
you might get
and
an
a window, you might get an empty and then it's luxurious because people don't like to book the middle. If someone does book the middle, all you have to do is be like, oh, hey, would you switch?
Yeah. My wife. So wouldn't you say something like that?
Yeah, but these people didn't.
No, they're like,
they just talked over you the whole time.
Like they came in together and they're both sitting there. Oh, you guys want to sit together? I can move. He's like, no way, kid. We don't want to sit in the middle. Good luck. She sits down. She goes like, must be nice for you.
Did they talk over you the whole time?
No, like a few times. And it was always in like, they're passive just aggressive. Pissed. They're just pissed.
Passive aggressive.
They're just pissed off. Are we going in the holding tank? Oh, yeah. Told you it wasn't going to be till 12:36.
Like Reginald.
Oh my goodness. It was the worst. It was just like two angry people. Mm. The only victory they have is when they spite the same person.
Oh, then they high five over you.
Yeah, big old high five.
Wow.
Yeah.
Where do you think they were from?
I'm going for Vancouver, Washington, just because it's where you're from, and these people reminded me of
They were kind of smug.
Yeah. No, just, but like, but it just, you know, you ever have that, so I've been listened to like five episodes of Tim Ferriss's podcast, which have been just really, really great.
Mm-hmm.
And phenomenal guests. Part of me, like, I don't want to like the show. I don't want to like Tim. I don't want to like this stuff.
But you
just
do.
Because, I don't know, there's just that thing. It's like, it's just like I feel like it's a competition.
It's a bandwagon thing.
But it's not. It's a bandwagon thing.
Mm-hmm.
But everything the guy puts out, I love every time. Just about every time. I mean, all the books. There's douchiness. There's broiness. There's all this other stuff. But
sounds a lot like Coldplay.
It wins exactly.
Like when they first came out, it was okay to like them.
Yeah, Yellow. Right? It was like, sure, it's a great song.
I actually saw them at the Schnitz in Portland playing Yellow.
Yeah,
it was that first album. They were. Great.
I bet they're sensational.
Yeah.
I had to put a marker there because you used the cuss.
Sorry.
What do you think this is, Mexico?
Sorry.
No, I want to encourage us to cuss, and I keep doing the bleeps because I think the bleeps are funnier. So it's a constant battle in my head. Do we bleep it or not?
Mm-hmm.
But anyways, going back to, I'm sitting there listening to Tim Ferriss, and what I love about this show is Tim really creates this great space for people to have these dialogues. So one in particular that I think I'll probably write a whole blog post on, or a quick little thing. When he interviewed the guy from Hardcore History. It's mm-hmm. It's incredible. It's just
Dan
so
Carlin
great.
Is his
yes,
name, right?
Yes, I think so. And Hardcore History is just this great show. I've only listened to four episodes, but they were tomes. You know, it's like this long show.
Epic. It's like a Ken Burns documentary.
Exactly. It was the Genghis Khan ones. Then Kevin Kelly, three-part Kevin Kelly, which Kevin Kelly is like the godfather of all of us on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
And, he I had
my DNA checked and there was part Kevin Kelly
yeah,
there.
Yeah, exactly.
It's
me
weird.
Too. Yeah, me too. Actually, there was
I'm like 1/8 Kevin Kelly.
Yeah,
and 1/16.
All
American
of us who
Indian.
Have a vestigial USB port are
right.
That's
exactly.
That's where
yeah.
that comes from.
Yeah.
That's from his.
It's not a prehensile tail.
No, it's a vestigial USB port.
Uh-huh. USB 2.0.
Yeah. Unfortunately, you know, my son actually got the 3.0, which.
Much faster data excited. Rates.
But it turns out it's pretty common.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty common.
These days.
Most kids are getting the USB 3.
Yeah. As is the name Aiden.
Yeah. Tell me about it. That was a mistake. I'm kidding.
What is he, a Lincoln?
No. We have like 25 listeners of the show who have like 9 Aidens between them. So
I'm sure.
It's perfect. So anyways, I'm listening to this stuff that's actually making me go like, wow, what am I here for? This is exciting stuff. You know, the Hardcore History guy is just talking about like, stop trying to be... Making me think about like, stop trying to get bigger. Stop trying to get more out there. Kevin Kelly, especially, like, hey, do what you have in you
mm-hmm.
and watch it grow. But like, somehow they're both making it sound like more than just that, like, follow your bliss sort of thing, right?
Yeah.
They're making it sound substantial and reminding me of that stuff because we've been in such a growth mode for several months here. And then everybody in the forums and Fizzle, all of these entrepreneurs we get to meet with, like, they need to put food on the table. We've got to make a dollar on this thing.
Yeah.
So what logo is better? What tagline is best? What's the best strategy? Which business? This one or that one? So it's just a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
And I don't respond really great to that all the time. And so it was a good little release valve to hit. So I'm sitting there steaming off like this release, reminding myself that life might be worth keeping going.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And building and making stuff. And then here's Vancouver locals just going like, see, I knew we weren't going to get off. I knew it. I knew it. You said it, but I knew it.
Yeah.
You know, and so it was just this funny juxtaposition of me going like, I want so much more Kevin Kelly and so much less of these people in my life.
It's interesting. We've talked about this for a few weeks now, I think, on the show. Just this concept of like, there's a lot of luck that plays into how successful your thing is. And you can't just will something to be successful. But I don't want to get into that. And I think I've said this every time.
Yeah.
I don't want to get into that mode of, well, there's nothing we can do. Like, either the thing's going to be a hit or it's not. Because
and Corbett, that's, I mean, your voice in my life, just as in my own little, like, I have my own to-do list. We're building Fizzle, but we all have our own to-do lists and projects that we run. But that voice, hearing that from you all the time, is like a constant reminder of me. And something I'm learning, that it's okay to have those feelings. And it's okay to challenge myself with a thing that doesn't feel, that doesn't just come up from the loins on up, the thing that isn't completely natural. Because when we go, what you learn from the Enneagram, if you're a super crazy person like me, like the more you are like yourself, actually the more you're like your personality type, the more out on the edges and sharper that you are, the less healthy you are. The more healthy you get, the more integrated you get to all the types, the less dramatic and intense your personality sort of spikes show up as. I have all of these personality traits that are my strengths, right? My creativity, my dynamism, my ability to like think up a fresh thing or to be incredibly enthusiastic about something.
Your mustache growing ability.
My fucking super furry barnacle grower on the front of my, right below my nose. Yeah. But all of this stuff that I can do, it's the same exact stuff that's going to be my downfall unless I temper those things with discipline, with a better mindset.
We're all that way.
Right. So for me, I'm very capable. And this is something we've got, and which plays into our topic today. But this is something we all have to do as entrepreneurs, figure out where our strengths are. Yep. And then we have to temper that in some ways. And I'm not talking about like, you know, the difference between finding your strength or getting better at some things that you're, but it's like, no, I'm talking about just being a regular human and staying in anything for longer than the week that you feel enthusiastic.
But I want people to realize this balance, because I think it's easy as a creative type to be like, oh, all of success is luck, and you put things out there, and if people are going to like it, they're going to like it.
Yeah.
And as a more like, you know, roll up your sleeves entrepreneur, a lot of times it's like, no, all success is hard work. Mm-hmm. That's what a lot of people think. And really, it's the way I like to think of it is, imagine it's like a stream, okay? So the luck that you have is the pace at which the stream moves, and you paddling the kayak or whatever you're in is the work that you're doing to make progress.
Yeah.
And if you're trying to go upstream, you're paddling your ass off and you're not making any progress because you picked a really bad business idea. Mm-hmm. If you just happen to get lucky and you pick this stream that's like flowing really fast, then you don't really have to paddle at all because this thing's just going to carry you to where you want to go. And for most of us, it's some combination. You pick something, it's going to have a little bit of momentum on its own, but you still have to paddle to make the thing work. It doesn't mean that you don't go looking for another stream and try to find one that moves faster.
Yeah, it doesn't mean that parts of the stream won't be going slow and some going much faster.
Right, exactly. And you might judge the overall success on, oh, I'm in the flats right now and it's not moving very fast.
By the way, I think we just figured out our metaphor for if we really wanted to go on the road as like speakers. Like,
yeah.
It would be like, hey, I'm Corbett and I'm here to tell you about the stream.
Yeah, probably should pick a better one.
Cue Moody Lights.
Probably should pick a better
one. How many of you out there want to start a business?
Yeah.
I see that hand. That's right. Just like doing the thing. I'm excited. I'm really excited to be here today with you because you know what? It's taken me a long, long time to get up on this stage.
No, I think you should talk like that. And then I should be like, and if you want to make more money, you gotta be more valuable.
I know we're doing some good things up here. We're having some fun. We're rooting and tooting, and we are just having a blast. But not all of life is about having fun. Am I right? Did you hear me on that? Not all of life is about having fun. Sometimes you got to eat a few pounds of shit, and sometimes you got to make the shit yourself.
And sometimes you got to paddle upstream.
That's right. My partner here, who is yelling through his nostrils, is, I'm kidding. Oh, that's great. We're having a blast.
We do have a topic for today's podcast, do we not?
Yep, which is, it's perfect time. This is the segment of the show where we start our topic. you know what? Fun thing for if you got a moment to write us in at heyguys@fizzle.co. heyguys@fizzle.co. Write us an email. What if we did a segment on this show? Like, imagine if every episode there was like at 45 minutes in, we do like 4 minutes of this. Like, whether it's one podcast I listen to is Script Notes, where they do at the end of the show one cool thing. Each of the hosts brings one cool thing at the end. Sometimes it's an app, sometimes it's a blog post, sometimes it's a quote.
And does somebody blow like a whistle or something to get
and clowns come
and
out.
They go, oh, it's time for one cool thing.
Exactly.
Today's one cool thing is brought to you by.
It's perfect. Yeah. And then Tim Ferriss on his show, he does a quote all the time. But I'd be really curious to hear if you had any ideas for sort of segments we could do on the show. Just like, I've had the idea of maybe Doing like little 3-minute conversations with a bunch of people who listen to the show.
Yep.
And just peppering the show with every once in a while, we'll put one of those in there, or every episode we'll add one. Let me know what you think. Hey guys at fizzle.co. I'd love to hear if you have any ideas for segments. So
I got some ideas. You never asked me.
Yeah, because you are a POS. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
A pal optimally set up.
Yeah.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
On the show today.
So
we put out a guide, and I think it's pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
We had a blog post that Corbett wrote called The Top 10 Mistakes in Starting an Online Business. And I've always looked for better ways to phrase that, by the way.
Yeah.
The Top 10 Mistakes in Starting an Online Business. There's just so many. It's
wordy.
It's like a preposition off.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, but I couldn't figure it out. And I also didn't devote a lot of time to it outside of, because it clearly already works. People are already clicking and loving that article. So we decided to turn it into a guide. Just taking that article, chunking it up into chapters. And then the fun part for me is like finding these images and adding these like quotes from some of our business.
You found some awesome ones too. And it's amazing that like every point in that article had a quote from somebody really great.
Yeah.
Like all the people that we've talked about on the show in the past, Seth Godin and
Fred Wilson, Seth Godin, Brad Feld, Paul Graham, Stephen Hawkins.
Yeah.
I love that picture of him.
Stephen
too.
Hawking is great.
You gotta get the guy just for the picture of Stephen Hawking because it's really beautiful to me. But so we made this guide. It's simple. It's free. You can get it at the show notes here, fizzleshow.co/80. That's 80. You'll see, I'll put in a big box there to get the thing. It's free. Just enter your email. What does that mean? Yeah, we're going to send you an email when we write when we put out another podcast, when we write another article. If you're interested in growing your business because you listen to the show, you probably are. You're not here for the airplane banter. Maybe
although it's not bad. Yeah.
That's what we do. And this is what, you know, some people call these lead magnets. Other people call them other things. Get free giveaways or whatever. What I love is that you guys, I get to allow Barrett and Corbett to think about the business strategy of this stuff. And I just liked making the book. Because the typography
you love making
is nice.
Yeah.
I love
it. It's a beautiful book. It's a beautiful book. And we actually have more than just this. We have a handful of guides now. If you go to fizzle.co/guides, you'll see the top 10 mistakes.
It's just stuff that
business.
I like to make. And then these guys say like, I think that'll do good or maybe that won't or whatever. But like the other one that's real big is our defining your audience guide, because there are two really great worksheets at the end of that thing. So that's
those two together. Those are a great start. Yeah. I think
I want to make one on choosing a topic. Because when I see this stuff, I go, okay, Where are the gaps in the story of any particular person who's trying to become self-employed? It's like that very first one on like, how do I figure out what I'm going to do? So you have this amazing course within Fizzle on choosing a topic, like a weighted average decision matrix and all this stuff. I'm like really tempted to just make that one free just because so many people struggle with that and it can shave off so much time.
What if we make it just $1?
Yeah, I don't know. That seems crazy. Could we?
I think we did.
What?
Yeah.
Tell me more.
Well, people can sign up for Fizzle and try it out for just
you
a
gotta
buck.
Be $1?
Yeah.
Oh.
Just go to fizzle.co. We've got a special offer going at all times.
Well, then why aren't more people signing up for that?
Well, a lot of people do.
Oh. I don't know these things. But a guide for each one of those things. And it's this weird mix for me trying to find like, you know. Anyways, I try to put all as many answers into the things we possibly can pack in. So this is a great guide. I think you're going to like it. And at the end, there's a bunch of different places you can learn more, like the link to a bunch of different podcast episodes and articles. And then each one of the quotes links to an article as well, except for, I think, one or two of them.
Yep.
From those people. So anyways, so what we're going to do is we're going to talk through just these because I feel like there's more color we can add to this. And because we could just, you people, you're driving. Look at you right now. You're driving in your car. Be safe. It's good. I listen to headphones in my car, too. That's fine. Because I don't have Bluetooth. And even if I did, we have Bluetooth in the Subaru. I don't connect my phone to that.
Really?
No.
It's kind of fun.
It's just like that. I'm like, couldn't be arsed, as I would say.
So this list, this came out of just a lot of conversations that I had with people. I was actually at a conference last summer and just had a lot of conversations with people who were frustrated and who had felt like they made some mistakes early on and it cost them a lot of time and energy and... Yeah. And I started asking people because I had a few conversations that happened naturally. And then I started asking everybody else I was talking with, like, what do you feel like you messed up on early on? And what would you change if you did differently? And this is something we ask people in our founder stories all the time as well. And so from that, I just took notes and eventually had this list that felt like a really solid top 10 mistakes that I kept hearing over and over again. Yeah. And you can call it starting an online business, whatever. It's starting a business in general. Mm-hmm. This is common, especially in the world that we operate in, where people are maybe trying to create a blog first or a podcast first or something, and then build products and things for sales services, yeah. that sort of thing afterwards. So should we just jump into it?
Jump in. Tell us the first one.
Cool. So the first one, should we read these quotes before or after?
No, let's just leave the quotes for people to discover
they're so
on
good,
their own.
Maybe we'll sneak a couple in though, because they're so good.
Yeah.
All right. So the first one, and this is one that happened to me actually early on.
Yeah.
And that is just waiting too long to launch your first product or service. So there's an issue here, and we've talked about this before, and this is what the lean startup methodology addresses, which is that the biggest risk as an entrepreneur is that you're going to release something that you spent months and months working on, and then it turns out that nobody likes it.
Yeah.
And you don't sell any, and you wasted 6 months or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But the solution to that isn't to try to validate everything you possibly can about your product, because I don't believe that validation actually works that well.
Mm-hmm.
People get really obsessed about it. Like, how do I know for sure that this thing I'm going to put out is going to work? You don't. This is the whole lottery ticket concept.
Yep.
So the solution isn't to wait a long time and to try to get a lot of validation, or to wait a long time because you're building this thing and trying to make it perfect. The solution is to just get something out sooner and not to put so much effort into it to make it more of a minimum viable product kind of thing.
Yeah. I listened to a great interview today there's a podcast called Product People that a friend of the show, Justin Jackson, runs. Great podcast, lots of great interviews with people in the startup sort of SaaS community. And the one today that he released was with Samuel Hulick of useronboard.com. So he's the guy that does these teardowns of the onboarding process of all of like Slack, of Instagram, of the new Google inbox and stuff like that. Great, just screen by screen, showing you exactly what they're doing and what they can improve. And, I get it. And then when you go through a bunch of these, you start to get like, you get steeped in what it means to do onboard stuff. It's one of my favorite sites on the internet, just because it's
onboarding's
so
fun too, to think about that experience.
Actually in that show, they mentioned the interview we did with Mark from Canlis. And they're just, so Justin was just like, I've been just thinking about how that guy looks at customers and saying, you know, people have been waiting all month for this night.
Yep.
Like we are going to make them the hero this night. Right. And he's like, that's what User Onboard does. Like when you do it really well, it does that great. Right. It does that.
Yep.
I'm going to put that in the show notes, because that you should listen to that. It's a really good conversation. And one of the things that Samuel says that sticks in my mind is he says, this launch that I put together, it was sort of haphazard. This is for a book that he was writing. It was sort of haphazard, and I made some mistakes, but I had done the research to know, like, you always screw up things when you launch, like, mm-hmm. like your first launch. So I just did this to get that out of the way.
Exactly.
To get those first launch jiggles out of the way.
Yep. Like you say, breaking the seal, just earning your first buck and then seeing what happens from there.
It makes such a big difference to come at this knowing. One of the things we said two episodes back, I think, on project management, I think this was episode 78, it was like, we don't just plan this next project, plan the next three, because your next project isn't going to be the reason why you're successful.
Right.
And you need to get in, like, is not more likely to be the reason that you're going to be successful than the other two or the ones you've previously done.
Right.
You just have to stay in that mode of going, 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 going.
Yep.
And that's what this starts to get us thinking of. And that's what tools, you guys don't know, you don't know how big of a deal it is that Gumroad is just, you just sign up and you just like, here's my, I made a PDF, an iBooks author, and I'm going to sell it. Or I made a thing over here, an article or anything, and I'm going to sell it for $1.
How easy it is to sign up for that. Yeah,
how easy it is to do that. Get it out there. Because then what's important is you launch it. Samuel tells this story. It's like he launched this thing. He had done the list growing and all this. He expected all this stuff. Hey, guys, he brought his family into the room on a like Thursday morning and said, watch this. And he clicked publish and immediately started seeing a couple sales, and then it sort of petered out.
Right.
And he was like not expecting that. And he's like, maybe you guys go back to breakfast. You have to learn that skill, or that reality
yep.
of you have to know First of all, how do I get something that's that has a beginning, middle, and end, a file that I can then put on the internet or something like that, some sort of course, some sort of coaching, some sort of anything that then I can say, this is what you're buying. This is why it's valuable to you. This is how much it costs. This is what you're going to be able to do afterwards. Here's the button to buy it.
Yep.
You know, then so you've made all of that. Getting to that point is a miracle in and of itself. Then getting someone to the page who's a qualified buyer who clicks the button, enters their credit card information, does the thing.
Yep.
Is a whole other miracle in and of itself.
Totally.
And when you get to the point, like, you know, so what were we talking about here is waiting too long. This number one mistake, waiting too long to launch a product or service.
Because you build it up in your mind that you're going to, that the first time out of the gate, it's going to be perfect, and it's not. Yeah. And the other risk is that, especially if you're trying to build an audience first, which is great, we recommend it because you get a lot of feedback and you kind of know what to build.
Yeah.
And launching a product is really just an experiment, right? It's like you have a hypothesis. Okay, there are these people with this problem. Here's the solution. I'm going to put it out there and see if they actually do want this thing. It's just an experiment. You got to look at it that way, and you have to do it multiple times. But the risk is, in building the audience, you can get so wrapped up in that process of building the audience that you get stuck on what some people call the content creation hamster wheel. Mm. You know, you're just like running around in circles, basically.
God, I know what that's like.
Don't we? All right. Second biggest mistake.
Let's do it.
Is simply solving an unimportant problem. And this is to hark back to some of the early Fizzle Show episodes.
60 episodes of this show.
60 episodes or something.
Yeah.
The point is, if someone has some horrible affliction and you have a way to cure it, guaranteed, it's easy to sell that thing, especially if there are no other solutions out there.
Yeah.
But if you're like, you know, I think there are a lot of people out there who feel disengaged because they have X, Y, and Z happening in their life. I'm going to solve that disengagement. And then you go, and it's like, is that really an urgent problem, feeling disengaged?
Yeah.
I mean, maybe it's one aspect of it, but it's not having hemorrhoids.
Exactly.
Or whatever.
That's always the example that we, and this is timely because on Tuesday, so right now is Friday, but on Tuesday we're publishing a thing. And when you're listening to this, four days ago, I published an article at the Sparkline, which I'll put in the show notes here, which has a video. I brought out a video from one of our most popular courses, the Defining Your Audience course. And it's this first video that sets up the paradigm and gives you like this one little breakthrough that I think was pivotal for me. And I talk about how most of us start a business. And Corbett, tell me if you resonate with this, because I know you do. But if you have like an actual personal story about this, because for me, starting a business always looks like, at least early on, it looks like I feel like I could do that. You see something and either you go like, hey, I can make a cupcake better than that. Or, hey, I could, I don't know, I could make a better website than that. Or I could make one that good. Like, hey, I could do that. I could do that. That's something I could do.
Right.
Oh, hey, I could, I wonder if I could do that. You know, it all starts that way. I wonder if do you think me would be the sort of person that would,
right.
I could probably, and then, so, which, okay, no, let's stop for a second, because for you to even think that you can do that is to start paddling upstream in terms of culture, you know, of just going against it, of like, hey man, shouldn't you just get a regular job and just do the thing?
It's true.
So already you've got this itch coming on that you're going to have to be brave to chase down.
Yeah.
You're going to have to be, you know, bold enough to go. Cause eventually for me, it's just like, it got too itchy. And as much as I could try to repress it, like it just kept going and being there.
And to me, it's not even compliment the metaphor there. It's not the paddling part. Really, that's getting out of the stream you're in right now, which is the meandering stream.
We're gonna go portage this Sunday.
The meandering stream of regular life. The choice to go build a business is to get out of that stream and put your life on hold for a while and go off in the wilderness and look for a new stream to put in.
Yeah. Because you're going from this canoe where you have several people maybe to this kayak, and there's like all these serious people with these serious life jackets and stuff. They got like neoprene suits on. They look you up and down and go like, you're not meant to be here, son.
Yeah.
You know?
And that's like the thing, right? And so the stream,
let's just keep this metaphor going all day long.
Entrepreneurship, you'll probably find a stream that's going to be rushing. It's going to be faster than that normal meandering stream of life.
And even though you get in right here, you can see the rapids down there. And you're asking yourself about those rapids when really all you got to do is jump in right here. And you're going to learn a lot about managing this kayak in the next, you know, mile before you get to the... Anyways, we get... Okay.
Yeah.
So if there's a way to beat a metaphor to death, I think we're not even close yet. We need to keep going with this throughout.
Totally.
But that idea of we all start there. We all start with like, I could maybe, or I think I could, because there's this fundamental necessary selfishness that... Because in order to get out of the stream that we're in, we've got to go inside and wonder, do we have what it takes? Which is great. That's what I call the necessary delusion of being an entrepreneur. Like, we yep. have to delude ourselves and just go,
yep,
I can do this. I can do this.
And because, you have to make a huge bet on yourself.
Yeah.
You know?
Totally.
And everything just goes against it.
So all, but the bummer with that is it forces, we have this very insular and myopic mindset around how we look at what business we should make.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So this thing that makes us capable, this battery or this talent that makes us capable of saying, I would like to do that a different way. I think I could be someone who could do that. Also makes us pretty bad at actually working on this second problem, solving an unimportant problem being a big, huge mistake. We pick something that we think's important, but it isn't because we're just focused on all we can do is just do whatever we can to get out of this one stream we're in. Because we don't really see the specifics of this kayak. We just see that there's a bunch of other people in kayaks and rapids down there and all this other stuff. But there might be a big gaping hole on the bottom of this kayak that we're thinking about. Could I pilot this thing versus is this thing salvageable? Is this actually where I'm going to let's try to make this metaphor work for every one of them. But
don't make a mockery of my metaphor.
I feel like we have to read the quote on this one.
Yeah, I do too. I was actually just going to say that. Like,
this is just, it's too perfect.
Yeah. You want me to do it?
You do it.
All right. And this is great. So this is one of those things where it can sound really trite to say solving an unimportant problem is like a big mistake of building a business, but it is. And the proof is it's not just what we think, but it's what some very smart people like Paul Graham think. So Paul Graham says, it sounds obvious to say you should only work on problems that exist. And yet by far the most common mistake startups make is to solve problems no one has.
Yeah.
So he went a step further, not even just to say solving an unimportant problem, but you have to solve a problem that exists.
Yeah.
A lot of startups try to solve problems that don't exist. It's this contrived idea that you have to go find new territory in your business and do something that no one else has done.
Yeah.
And if it's a problem worth solving, chances are other people have already solved it. So competition isn't necessarily a bad thing.
Yeah.
Make sure that you're solving a problem that really exists.
And I get into some of that, in lean startup world is called customer development. And I get into that and sort of a basic framework of that in the post I published on Tuesday, which is the difference between a successful business and a failing side project. So I'll put that in the show notes for you. Let's get into the next one.
The next one, and this is another one. It's funny, as I was talking to these people and gathering this list, most of the time I was like, oh my God, yeah, I made that mistake myself. Yeah. And it was painful.
Yeah, because they're so like this. These are the most common mistakes.
And this one was big for me, and that is not really listening to customers.
Mm.
I think it's really easy to say, "Oh yeah, I'm listening to customers," you know, because I read an email from somebody or something. But in my first big startup attempt, we operated for 3 years, and I never had a single customer interview. Mm. I never sat down and actually talk to a customer.
Or like watched. I mean, how do you listen though, right? There's also analytics. And you looked a lot at analytics, I'm assuming.
I looked at analytics like a
Well, let's not bring your mom into this.
But mostly what we did was we had this vision of who our customer was. Mm-hmm. And we really tried to solve problems for ourselves.
Yeah.
We tried to eat our own dog food or whatever they say. But at the same time, I never really connected with our product. I never felt like, oh my God, I can't live without this. It was more like I used it because it was our product, you know, or my mom used it because it was my product.
Which is really common in a lot of businesses. And there's no substitute for, I was just reading this classic old book on copywriting and David Ogilvy saying, there's absolutely no substitute for you actually giving a damn and wanting to buy this product. If you're convinced of this thing, you will write a better ad. And if you're not, if it's just another laundry detergent,
it's true.
Then you do all the research and you try to write a great ad, and sometimes they perform great. But I've watched young copywriters be convicted about a thing, and it was close to their hearts, and it just performed better. They just were capable of so much more in that environment.
So one of our top pieces of advice is to listen to your customers, because every problem you have will be solved if you really pay attention to your customers and listen to what they're saying about the problem and what they're saying about your solution to it.
And then like I there, this is, so again, to that post that I wrote on Tuesday on the difference between a failing side project and a successful business, this concept of customer development, absolutely critical. And once you get it, once you, like, if you haven't read the Lean Startup, or if you haven't done like a YouTube primer on it, or if you haven't listened to the relevant episodes of this show, or just all of them, because you get just the sense of what we're talking about here. Finding a problem that you have, and then you go to the other people and say, like, okay, so outside of your own experience of this problem, what are the problems that they have? And I have this quick little simple formula for doing that at the end of that post, the failing side project post. So check it out. And I think one thing that should be said about this is be careful who you do listen to.
Mm-hmm.
Because sometimes you're going to have to fight for things. You'll be in a place where you get to choose. Do I choose the one that performs better, or the one that represents the business I want to make? The people that I want to find and care about greatly, or the people who, or the much larger group of people who are just clicking and buying things, or whatever, right? It's like this weird place to be, and there's this dream of being the artist and like being really authentic and personal and all of these things. There's this other dream of making gobs and gobs of money, right? And you have to kind of have to like navigate more navigation on the waters.
Yeah.
But so be careful who you do listen to. And the quote on this one, which we won't read, kind of lends itself to that. See, that was a little bit of like a find out more.
Find out more. Go
see,
to.
That's a tactic.
Yeah.
See, and I hate tactics, but yeah, we have to resort to them because of the world that we live in.
Telling people about things, I don't feel like that's a tactic. It's just
That it exists, but then I'm not giving you the specifics.
Oh, that, yeah.
What they call the information gap. I hate the things I know.
Information gap.
I mean, not that I'm good at it. Like, the things I'm good at is like, look at me doing a song and dance show. I'm a chunky monkey.
That's a real Derek Halpernism right there, the information gap.
Yeah, well, it predates him.
Yeah, but that's something he really likes.
That's some Tim Ferriss New Rich stuff. It is something Derek
New Rich.
Likes.
All right, number four on this list is not being different.
Yeah, which is, there's a business term for this somewhere, isn't there? What is that?
Unique selling proposition, differentiation.
That's the one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the whole concept here is that whatever space you're in, it's likely there are going to be other solutions to the same problem that you're trying to solve.
Which is a good thing. We said that before. It's a good thing because competition proves this market exists.
Yep. No,
I mean, as long as these people are actually have in businesses.
If there's zero competition, it's like it kind of is a red flag.
It's a red flag, but it's also, I mean, don't listen to us on that because you could literally create a market.
Yeah, and it does
happen.
But
don't be too delusional about it. Know that it's going to be
tough. It does happen. But let's assume that you're not creating a market because more than likely, if you're trying to create a market, you're violating number three, which is solving a problem that doesn't exist, right?
Yeah.
So instead, probably there's going to be competition. And that means that you have to come up with a compelling point of difference between your solution and other solutions that exist in the market so that people have a reason to choose you.
Yeah.
Otherwise, they'll go, eh.
Great example of this is Saddleback Leather.
Mm-hmm.
I saw a video recently, which I'll put in the show notes, of Dave from Saddleback, who I was a part of the team that helped create that website
a long
time ago.
Yeah.
It was just fun. Just briefly. Then, but anyways, he's on this video and he's like, here, let me show you how to make a Saddleback Leather bag. Let me show you how to make a bag like ours. And he just shows...
If you want to knock off this bag, here's how to do it.
If you want to knock off this bag, here's how to do it.
Yep.
And it just shows how cheap and flimsy every... Like, the different models, the different kinds of leather there are, and like how they... This is how they degrade, and that's why we use this one over here. So it just costs a fortune to get this raw material. So, but that's how you would do it. And then... So the sewing, and he just points out all the details, and they're not just details. It's so that the product... Because the whole USP, the unique selling proposition that you... The actual, you know, the tagline for them is they'll fight over it when you're dead, which is literally one of the better taglines I've ever heard in my entire life.
Yeah. And so the point of difference for them is, you know, you could buy any old bag and use it for a year, or you could buy this incredible, superior piece of craftsmanship
takes like 4 years to break in.
Yeah.
Let alone
exactly,
you know, that it's going to last
like that
100 years.
Goddamn pair of jeans I bought earlier this year. It's going to take like 4 years to break this thing.
It takes a long time.
So that's a good example. Another good one is Tom's Shoes. Everybody's familiar with that. Mm-hmm. Their point of difference was you buy a pair of shoes from us.
You buy your conscience too.
We give a pair of shoes to a child in need somewhere else in the world.
I was just in a meeting with the guys from Invisible Children, another great nonprofit. And what I brought to the table was like, it seems dubious that they've sold an awful lot of shoes. And I never see kids in Africa with Toms on. Like, I've never once.
Yeah.
You know? And I've seen a lot of things going on in Africa.
Sure.
But it just doesn't seem like the amount of good that comes out of it doesn't equal the amount of money
there's a
coming
whole,
into
there's
it.
A whole bunch of debate about Toms and whatever, but...
Yeah, which will be a part of their story, right? Now, like, that could... Culture could get to a point where now that's a thing. But you're exactly right, where this is a very simple value proposition that you get in an instance.
Well, and think about it. Like, who in their right mind goes into the shoe market? Like, it's so established, right?
Yeah.
And yet, Toms was able to take off very quickly because they had a really strong point of difference.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and it's also, I mean, look at it. It's a very simple shoe. It's made out of cloth. It just lent itself to this cultural moment of, like, I don't need more. I need to be satisfied with less, but I'm going to pay a premium for that because I don't actually want less. I just want to look like I'm conscientious or whatever. Like, right? So all of that stuff, like mixing
it matters.
And then there's actual, you know, people who really did feel that way. There's just all this stuff that it was perfect because the uniqueness of that shoe was actually just the shoe itself too.
Right.
And then tack on the whole fact that we're giving another pair away. And it's like, yeah, let's save the world. Screw it. Let's do it.
Yep.
Screw it.
Let's do it.
Why isn't that now like a cursive shirt? Sort of like, how come I land on a lot of websites and I see a lot of t-shirts with those girls with the boobs
there. Screw it, let's do it.
You know, and why didn't I say screw it, let's do it?
Yeah.
Come on.
It's kind of, I like it.
It's perfect.
Let's make that shirt,
Chase. Let's make that shirt.
It's great. Hey, you guys, next, we'll report on the shirt.
Exactly.
Soon.
All right.
Screw it,
keep me into the shirt thing. I'll do it through Cotton Bureau and we'll actually do it. Let's actually do the screw it, let's do it shirt. Because I would love to put some of this hand lettering stuff to the test. And in the meantime, let's go to number 5 here. I'll read it off. Number 5, the number 5 of 10 most common mistakes entrepreneurs make when starting a business is choosing a topic that you don't care about. This one's so good. And I'll tell you why. I've never heard it expressed better than when in an interview with Josh Shipp on one of our episodes. I think it was the one about defining audience, about how all these entrepreneurs get inside their customers' head. Those are two great episodes, 49 and 50, I think. But I think it was another one that Josh Shipp was on, where he talks about if you don't actually give a damn about the people you're building your business for, you'll find it hard to stick through all the rigmarole that you have to do in every single business, no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much where you could be super passionate about something. It will become a job. Show me a man who's passionate about something. I can try to find a way to get him to get paid for that thing. And I will show you how he all of a sudden is like, I don't know if I really like this thing anymore. You know, it turns to ash in your mouth potentially. But there's so much work that's involved in any business. It's tough stuff. There's going to be up weeks and down weeks and all that other stuff. You feel good one week, you feel bad the other week. And when you actually believe in the plight of the people that you're serving with your business, you're capable of sticking through things that you probably wouldn't if you resented these people, if you didn't feel for them.
Totally.
That to me is the best explanation of why to do this. Besides the fact that, like, honestly, for me as a copywriter and designer, every insight that I've good performing thing that I've put together has been because I got some piece of empathy for these people. All copywriting, all design, all sales, all that stuff is about empathy.
Yep.
And it doesn't matter if it's a fake empathy or real empathy, but you have to get to that point where you see them and you understand their plight and you feel for them, because that's where that headline, that stuff comes from. For me, I'm not talking about being a professional copywriter. I'm talking about just for me, for my stuff.
Yep.
That's been a huge deal for me.
Yep. And we have a great quote in here, which I'll leave for people to check out. But another quote comes to mind.
Oh, snap. Info gap. There's another shirt.
Oh, snap. Info gap.
I hate that. I do not want to be associated with that comment. I want to beep that whole thing out.
Another really good one. That comes to mind is from Jim Carrey about watching his father struggle at something that he didn't like doing.
Yep.
And Jim Carrey says that you can fail at doing something you don't want. So you might as well take a chance doing what you love.
Oh, and I just love it. And if you haven't seen that commencement speech, and it's in toto, as the Latin people would say.
In totes?
In totes, as the Latin mall shoppers would say.
Mm-hmm.
It's so worth your, 29 minutes or however long it is.
I hope these don't sound trite, because these are serious.
I know, it's hard, but I always feel like things are trite in here. Advice is trite.
Yeah.
Advice is always trite.
Yeah.
That's why it's like so much, it's almost easier to apply it specifically to a person and their story and their specific question.
It's true.
Okay, so choosing a topic you don't care about, you can intuit enough about that, what that means. You got to care about the thing that you're doing. The whole dream here is to find something that you want to make and they want to buy.
Yep.
And so that's a real dance, and it takes time to do it, but it's doable.
Yep.
We watch people do it every day and in surprising ways.
Totally.
You know?
Yeah, and the whole point is that sure, you could succeed choosing something that you don't like,
mm-hmm.
but for that to happen, you're going to have to get really lucky, and that thing's going to have to take off pretty quickly.
And it could be something you just like for, like, I think of the green smoothie girls.
Mm-hmm.
Super green smoothies?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And like they probably, I don't know exactly the origin story, but they probably were like, oh, I like smoothies. Like, we're doing this for this healthy or for this diet factor or for this whatever. And then they started doing a thing. And it started catching on like wildfire, and now it's their job. They do it for a living.
Yep.
You know.
Yeah.
And who would have thunk?
Yeah. And so it doesn't have to be your number one biggest passion ever in the history of your
life.
That's
why we say care and not passion.
Right. Exactly. So simplegreensmoothies.com. It's Jada and Jen. They have a really great story. You can find a bunch about them there.
Yep.
All right. Number six on our list of top 10 mistakes.
This is a real good one.
This is a good one. And this is something we built a whole course around in Fizzle, because it's so important.
I love that course. I think it might be a little esoteric, but a lot of people like it. Or, I mean, I hear from people, there's a vocal minority that likes it, but I don't know if it's over most people's heads.
Yeah. So this mistake
there's drawings of undies and stuff in there.
This mistake is starting with vastly wrong expectations.
And I cannot tell you how important this is. Really, seriously. I just had a vision in my mind of, what was it, in Living Color, where there was the film critics?
Yeah. Men on Film?
Yeah, Men on Film.
Oh, God, that was good. I love that.
Oh, that was so good.
It's been so long, I haven't seen that
we gotta watch
20
that.
Years.
Starting with vastly wrong expectations is because here's what the number one killer of your, the whole thing, the top 10 mistakes, what's the consequence of any of these mistakes? The biggest consequence is you burning out and saying, I'm giving up on being an entrepreneur. I'm not capable of this.
Yeah.
I don't have what it takes. I'm not cut out for this. I was stupid to think that I could do this in the first place. Everybody was right about me. My demons were right about me too.
Yep.
Right? So when you start with vastly wrong expectations, when you come in expecting this one thing, now here's the subtle thing about expectations is you don't know what expectations you have most of the time until you're disappointed.
Right.
And that's why we made that freaking course, so we can get to what are the concrete expectations you should have about your business.
Yeah.
Like on a time-based sort of thing. So 2 weeks from now, 6 months from now, all those sorts of things. What getting to a little bit of clarity about that, just a little bit of clarity, pulls that stuff from the inside of you out. So now it lives outside of you and you are not that expectation because you've just done the simple act of awareness of, hey, instead of just being a rage monster when you're disappointed,
right.
Instead of being a depression, cloud when that happens to you.
Right. And I think the biggest expectation that people have is that this one business idea makes or breaks whether or not I'm a success as an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
And also that, I will know within a couple of months whether or not this thing is successful.
Yeah.
And if people just looked at it as, no, this is a long-term thing. It might take me a decade, but it'll still be worth it because it's a hell of a lot of fun along the way.
Yeah.
And once I get to those results, it's pretty incredible. And think of it not as, don't define yourself as the experiment. Define yourself as a scientist. The experiments are things that need to be external to you.
Yeah.
And you just have to design them.
That's another
and carry
thing
them out.
In the lean startup model that is so liberating. This concept of you don't have a business idea, you have a hypothesis.
Right.
And you're proving, you have to do some work, just some simple experiments, and your dream is to prove that this hypothesis is correct or to change the hypothesis until you find the correct one.
Yep.
People suffer with itchy bums. And my hypothesis is that a cream that stops a bum from itching would be a successful thing. Like, they would buy this stuff. So I started talking to people and nobody wants to talk about their bum. Okay, that's going to be a difficult thing. But when I did get these two weird people to start talking about their bums, they actually didn't
speak. I learned something else.
Yeah, they didn't speak English. So maybe it's bigger in a Spanish-speaking market or something. Who knows right. what, right? But you start learning things because you're not this idea. You did this classic Buddhist, you know, meditation thing around where it's like, I'm not my thoughts. You're not this idea. But your expectations will make you feel like you are that business idea and you're not cut out for this thing because this business idea failed.
Yep.
And that is such a killer of men and women.
The other two big misaligned expectations, I think, are one, people aren't, they don't expect the emotions that come along with being an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
They don't expect to have those emotions or they don't know because they've never experienced them that deeply.
Yeah.
And the other thing is just time. Mm. I think a lot of people don't realize how long this thing is going to take.
Yeah. I think that if you could just get some things straight on time, if you could say in 5 years, I'm going to know exactly what this business is, like, or maybe even 3 years. In three, I'm going to give myself 3 years to work my butt off to figure out exactly what this thing is. In 3 years, then I'll really be able to, you know, figure out what my title is and what the business plan is, stuff like that or whatever, right? Yeah, so now you've got some experimenting to do and all this other stuff. Just my favorite quote on this is Brad Feld talking about the hardest thing for a 22-year-old entrepreneur to do is to look at the next 22 years and plan accordingly.
Right.
Because entrepreneurship is a long view of many short cycles.
Yep.
And so if you could say, all right, I've got 3 years, so let's chunk that up into six chunks. Right. So six-month things. Give yourself some time off in each one of those. Give yourself some goals in each one of those. Give yourself some like choosing which metrics that you're going to test through those things. Is it going to be traffic? Is it going to be sales? Well, I got to figure something to sell.
Yeah.
What's it going to be? You're creative. You can do this. You can have other people. Another expectation I'd say is the people in your life. Like if you're married or if you're in a long-term relationship, go and listen to episode the one we did on romance and entrepreneurship. It's so good because what we do, because we get to hear from someone who this cost them everything.
Episode 55. And he's doing fine, by the way.
Yeah.
Was it Terry?
It's Terry.
Yeah. Terry's doing fine, but it was rough.
They were young but. Anyways, so romance stuff, your partnership with your lover, esposa.
Your lover,
your partner. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, you are partners.
Touch my monkey, love it. Should we move on to number 7?
I can't wait to make that the intro to this one. Touch my monkey, love it. Yeah. You like it? Yeah. This is Terry the monkey. You like?
Number 7
yeah.
on our list of top 10 mistakes you can make in starting a business.
Such a squirmy monkey.
And this is one that I think affects a lot of people listening to this right now. You know who you are. We're going to call you out here. And that is spending too much time thinking and not enough doing.
All right. Sometimes, you know, you just like, I want to be a rapper, right? But you don't like do the work, you know? You're not out there in the clubs. You're not out there in the streets. You're not with the people, right? You're up in your what?
Oh, do you remember the streets?
The streets.
They were good.
That's how I'm like channeling when I do that.
Yeah.
I don't know if I like her or not, but I was going to give it a try.
But she's fit,
like, so I was thinking about maybe taking her out for a bye. And just like, it's so...
Man, I'm going to listen to that album.
Yeah. Spending too much time thinking and not enough time doing. This is full contact sport. Starting a business is a full contact sport, and you don't know what it's like to get in the arena until you're just out there doing it. And that sounds super cheesy. It sounds super cliche and all this stuff. But just you like this is what's so important about the next one. I'll save this for the next one.
So there's a couple of concepts that really apply here. So the first is the famous Thomas Edison quote, which is that genius is 1% inspiration and 99% perspiration. And that's coming from a guy who is, I mean, heralded, right? He's like one of the most famous American inventors of all time.
Totally.
Probably the most.
I mean, Thomas Edison was so good. Do you know that he like did like a life like a light bulb or something? Do you know that he do you know that when he was like 35, he
he had like just like invented stuff. And like, what have I done? I've done nothing. You know what I mean? It's so weird. But so cool. But anyways, I'm fine with it because like I have like whatever low self-esteem and like body image issues. But like I love light and I love Thomas Edison too. So I mean, think about that. When
and
you
light bulbs have really changed your life.
Like I would not know. I would not know what to do if I didn't have a light bulb in my house right now. I swear to God.
The other thing that really applies here, we should put this in the show notes, and I know that we've mentioned it a bunch of times because it's one of my favorite blog posts of all time, which is the Derek Sivers post on ideas are simply a multiplier of execution.
Ideas are simply a multiplier of execution.
So with no execution, you get no value out of an idea,
with
right?
With no execution, there is no value in an idea.
In a world. With no execution.
In a world where Derek Sivers writes a blog post and gets quoted 4 years later.
Exactly.
I like it. No, so, but let's just leave it at that. Spending too much time thinking and not enough time doing. I don't know how to motivate you enough to go, because there's this point, there's this thing where it happens. It clicks.
You have to snap out of it.
It clicks. And you go, oh my God, I've been doing it. Like, you don't see what you don't see, right? So I'm telling you right now, if you don't have the thing up, then you're doing this. And then you can just try to manage whatever you feel about that between here and there.
Yeah.
Get it out. Get it to whatever you're planning on doing right now. Chop that project in a quarter. Do 25% of it. Get that to a point where you can put it on the internet, which is the World Wide Web, www.google.com to learn more. Mm-hmm. And then you get to say, I'm no longer just thinking, I've done a little bit. But you've got to then have a roadmap to finish the rest of the 70% of the project. I don't know if that makes 100, but I'm just going to say 75.
It's like 77.7.
It was like 33.33333. All that. I don't know.
To infinity.
Round the one.
Yeah.
You know, up. Okay, let's move to the next one.
Let's move on.
Which I think is probably, I mean, yeah, all of these are so important, actually.
Aren't they?
Yeah.
It feels like any one of these could be the death of your
I could make, situation. Yeah, I feel like we could be completely focused on any one of these and our work would never be done.
And you know what? You can also overcome any one of these. So don't feel like if you made this mistake,
oh,
you're
God,
totally screwed.
Totally. Like I was totally too much of a thinker and not a doer. And now I'm like doing all the time. Like I do this, I do that. You know what I mean? It's just like I get done by everything. Like I'll do it.
So this one, this is another one that I made, another mistake I made, which is...
I'll be damned.
Do you want a drum roll? Number 8.
Bing!
Going it alone.
Oh my goodness. Yeah.
The idea tell here, me more. So the idea here for me is that the only reason that my business exists today, that this thing, that I'm still an entrepreneur, the only reason that I'm still an entrepreneur is that people talked me out of quitting multiple times. They wouldn't let me quit. Because I made the best choice ever at some point, which was to not go it alone anymore, to put accountability in someone else's hands over whether or not I followed through with what I was supposed to do, what I knew in my good emotional state that I needed to be working on. And I let them be the fail safe so that in my low emotional state, I didn't fall through the floor and just completely stop.
Because that's what it's like to be alive as a human. Is you have brain chemistry and brain chemistry just wants to screw you.
And sometimes you're like, you know what? I need to do this, that, and this, and that. And you make a long list of everything. And if you do all that stuff, your life is going to be set. And then in your low state, you can't get off the couch to do a single thing. And it's really easy to just give up at that point. Yeah. And the best insurance against that is to Allstate. To find a supportive group of other people who are trying to do something similar. And to lean on those people during those times.
Totally. And the amount of, this has been something that's like, I've famously not been in any mastermind groups. And if Barrett was here, he would talk about his post on mastermind, on getting into a mastermind group, why to do it, how to do it.
Which just came out.
Things, which it's just came out 2 weeks ago. You have to get to that post. It's really good. Especially if you're not in a mastermind group, but also the things that we're doing in Fizzle. I mean, to be able to bring your questions there.
Right.
When I go in there and I see someone struggling with the defining the audience stuff and they're kind of missing the point. So I was like, okay, here's some more questions to think about to get them to the point where they can maybe see some of this a bit more.
Yep.
It's to be able to just like, to be able to just not feel alone is enough, you know? But like, because that's a huge deal. That's a huge deal to go from, because everybody in your family or whatever, the voices in your head are so loud.
Yeah.
They're so loud because everybody else at the office that you're at is kind of like, they just kind of live their life and do the thing. And here you are like reading about starting a blog or making a business or doing a thing. It's like, come on, don't be so uppity.
Yeah.
Like, what are you, better than me?
Yeah.
Right? All of this incredible amount of social pressure that way. Yeah, that even if it's not real, you just kind of feel it, you know?
And so it doesn't have to be a mastermind group, but it has to be something. It could be a really supportive spouse, you know?
If there's
somebody you can really talk to, that's cool. It could be a coach. It could be a mentor. It could be a business partner. That's a good way to stay on track.
And it could be just having exposure to other people's stories too.
Yeah.
This is something we have a goal of doing is telling more of the stories of the people in the trenches with you than, because everybody hears the same stories from a lot of the successful folks out there. We all know those stories. But like, what about the stories of like the person who's building a bar above right now, where it's like just kind of starting to hit that point and like they put out a product and like we're seeing some success and it's like, what's this like right now? And what did it take to get to here? Because they remember the fight to get there. Whereas, you know, I don't know, Gary Vaynerchuk forgets a lot about that or who knows what, right?
Yeah.
So just hearing those stories and being around them
that are closer to where you're at.
Yeah, because then you just feel like, oh, that's amazing.
Yep.
That's like what I want to do.
All right. Number nine is something that doesn't apply to everybody, but if you are blogging or podcasting or producing free content of any kind as a tool for growing an audience, the number nine mistake is confusing a blog with a business.
Mm-hmm.
So repeat after me. Ready?
Repeat after me.
A blog is not a business.
A blog is not a business. A blog is not a business. All right. A blog is not a business. Yeah, I think I sort of get it, but what do you mean?
Giving away free content is a great way to build influence and grow an audience and all that kind of stuff, but giving away all the free content in the world is not a business model.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't mean that you can't use advertising or something like that works for some people. But in general, giving away free content is just a way to gain influence over a group of people and to understand the problems that they have so that then you can build a product or a service or something that solves that problem for them.
Mm-hmm.
And the quote here, it's a real short one, so I'm going to read it. I'm not going to do the information gap thing.
Do it.
Fred Wilson, a venture capitalist, likes to say that you should monetize the audience, not the content.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an important distinction.
First time I heard that, I had to think about it for a while. Mm-hmm. What do you mean? What do we mean by that? It sounds like I might be whoring out my audience here. It sounds like it might be like using them to get to my stuff. And which, by the way, like you can make that argument for every business out there.
Right.
Right. But you can also provide so much value. I heard this other quote from David Ogilvy saying, every customer in every product experience ever should say, how do I get this much for the price?
Like, right.
How is this possible?
Totally.
Like, you know, to be able to create that is pretty cool. But to the other end, I was just at a skate and snowboard shop. I haven't been in there, those kinds of places in a long time. Saw this jeans, like, you know, raw jeans, but it wasn't anything special. And it didn't have like a name brand. It was like no name brand. And on the tag, it just said, I know, remarkable, right? Just paying for the materials instead of some highfalutin brand.
Yeah.
Right? Instead of like $900 for $300 for a pair of jeans.
Are they the ones that are they like no label?
I don't know. I just know that I saw that tag and it just stuck out to me. It stuck me in the tuchus. So this concept though of confusing a blog with an audience. So a blog is a platform to reach people who have needs, and if you make something that they can buy to solve their problem, to alleviate that pain, to fulfill their needs and desires, then you are, as they say, in business. Okay. So a blog, a podcast, Samuel Hulick in his interview, like I was mentioning before on Product People, he talked about this really well because what he started with is he said, I wanted to write a book on user onboarding, but I didn't have an audience. So I started doing these teardowns, and it just started generating a ton of buzz. It was this tactic to get people to a place where they could sign up to be interested in this sort of thing where he could write the book on this thing that these people are learning about, right? or keen to learn about. They're showing interest in learn just by being there, clicking the buttons and doing the thing at the end of every one. It's like, hey, listen, I wrote a book on this, or I am writing a book. If you're interested, check out this, yada, yada, yada. He tells that story really, really well. And he does it with he seems to have done it with a strategy that I certainly never had when I was building any of my blogs early on.
Yep.
But I would absolutely do if I was building something
and
from
some
scratch
of,
right
and
now.
And some of that's normal. You know what? You just have to find your voice and do the writing thing and show up and whatever. And it's all part of the process.
Yeah.
But, you know, if your goal is to build a business, you're going to save yourself a lot of heartache if you start thinking about those things earlier than later, because it's really easy to get 3 years into a blog.
That's what's built into your topic course in Fizzle is like, hold on, are these people going to be able to buy a thing? Is there a thing here? First of all, can they pay? Will they pay? You know, when we're researching the audience, do they have money? Are they college students? They're probably not going to buy it, right? If they're college students, they don't have a heck of a lot of money. So let's think for a second about that. But maybe they're buying World of Warcraft. Maybe they're buying like cheat sheets for studying for stuff. I have heard of some great businesses doing well there.
Yeah. All right. You ready to move on?
I'm ready for the very last
The very last one.
Yeah.
This turns out to be the most important one.
Yeah.
Or the biggest mistake, I think.
You know what? I'm so glad you said that, Corbett, because I was sitting here wondering which of these is the most important. So tell me more.
You want to do this one?
So what I find here is I'm imagining, like, you know, those like co-hosts on like the cooking shows, like they're basically infomercials for the George Foreman grill.
Oh yeah.
He's like, I'm going to teach you how to make a steak. It's going to be the greatest steak you ever had. It's going to be real easy. George, I can't wait to try it. All of our in-studio audience, I can just smell it. Oh my goodness, it smells delicious. So I see you have some little bowls with things inside them here. Yeah, those are my garlic and just start getting like,
yeah,
that's amazing. You know, that's like just like
super patronizing.
Just in every infomercial everywhere. Okay, so number 10, not the biggest mistake, the number 10 mistake that entrepreneurs make when they're starting a business is not starting at all. This goes obviously.
Is that a trick?
What?
Because you're starting a business, but you're not starting.
I mean, I thought the same thing, but then I was.
But then I talked you into it.
Pretty drunk, and so I was like, "What do you mean?" I was like, "You convinced me," but then I think I forgot.
The only way to guarantee failure, and this happens. How many of us have that friend who, for the past 10 years or something, has talked and talked and talked about how much they hate their job, about how they have this great idea that they just know would work, that one day they're going to blah, 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 build a business or do whatever or become a park ranger, whatever it is their dream is. And all it ends up being is talk. And then you just imagine them when they're 50 or 60 or something looking back on never having actually chased that dream and how sad that is. It's that quote about how most men live lives of quiet desperation, you know?
Wow. I'm affected by that right now. The idea that most men live their lives are quiet. Okay, keep going.
But anyway, the only way
I feel
to truly
like I'm living quiet
the only way to
right
truly
now.
Guarantee failure it's this it's this idea again of looking at entrepreneurship as not one individual battle but the overall war, and the only way to guarantee failure is to never start at all.
We will roust the enemy, and we shall flank them. And it will be a war of attrition because we have all the Tupperware.
Tupperware?
Well, because all of the spices and meats and foods need to stay fresh.
That's true.
We have to feed an army, you know.
And the rum.
That's not just a saying. but not starting at all. I mean, this is self-explanatory. But the truth is, there's so much magic in here. Being the person that says, well, I could, maybe I could do. Do you think I could? Maybe. That thing that you got to understand, you are so damn brave to even think about that for a second. I think 100 years ago, maybe 2,000 years ago, we're all asking that question or forced to ask that question. What am I going to do for a living? In a way that's like, I have to make it myself, you know, in some ways. But nowadays, for the last 100 years, there's a very hard and fast tradition of we go to work at businesses that we can believe in because we have always done what, you know, that's what the school system was created to make like things in military and in corporations just be real smooth.
Be soldiers.
Oh, good. I'm used to this. So this is how I get an A. All right, cool. Thanks, teacher. Cleavage shot. You know what I mean? What?
What?
I don't know. What are you talking about?
It's getting deep into the show today.
Hey, did anybody order
folks,
a pizza?
Thanks for making it.
It's true. Because this is what happens when we don't have Barrett here.
Yeah, to keep us on track.
Because
yeah,
I can get you going. I can get you off track.
You can get me off track. You can also get me doing that. You know, like when a dog turns its head sideways. Yeah. Like, yeah. What are you talking about?
Yeah,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. I like it, but you let me roll. You let me roll.
I do.
You let me roll. You let me roll,
partner.
You let me roll. I'm rolling. You let me roll. You're the one who's letting me roll. I'm rolling.
How do you stop you from rolling? That's the problem.
It's true. It's a bit of a nightmare. So not
you really
starting
have to
at
just
all.
Distract you and go squirrel,
squirrel. Wait. What'd you say? So not starting at all. All I can say is I salute you. Any of you out there who are even thinking about doing anything, let alone actually doing the thing.
It's the corollary to just don't quit. Mm-hmm. Our other mantra.
Yeah. So
get started and just don't quit.
This is a nightmare, and it's the most exciting and fun puzzle I've ever had to try. I've ever got to put together is creating a business. I couldn't picture doing anything differently because it's just an exploration. It's real life. I feel like I'm on the plains trying to hunt down a caribou or something like that. Like this feels like being human in a lot of ways because some days I don't eat. Some days I leave and I go, I don't know if I got anything done today, but. You, if you've started this thing, I mean, if you can get something out the door, just anything, you get one foot in front of the other. Next thing you know, you've walked an awful long ways and the river is flowing underneath you and all the metaphors that we've said today.
Yep.
I hope we don't sound like two hucksters up here with a bunch of cliches and advice.
We probably do.
I'm not a huckster and I'm sick of sounding like one. I feel like I do.
All right. Well, check this out. I think this guide is really good. There's a whole lot more detail, a lot of quotes in here, a lot of great images, and a big list of next steps. If you've been listening to this wondering, okay, that's great. I don't want to make that mistake, but what do I do next? Mm-hmm. We have a great page full of all kinds of next steps you can do.
I found out how to not sound like a huckster.
What's that?
Like, give me another, like, say another thing.
So you should check out our guide.
Or whatever.
Or oh, there you go.
You just end everything with or whatever. So you can get the guide for free by putting in your email address or whatever.
Or whatever.
I've been Chase Wardman Reeves.
I've been Corbett Barr. I remember.
Fizzleshow.co/80. That's 80. Is where you'll find the notes and the conversation about this episode. I have listed out a bunch of different quotes and all sorts of stuff on this one. You're going to like it, including this great video that we mentioned of ripping off the Saddleback leather bag. Every entrepreneur should watch this and strive to make something with this much of a, I don't know, there's so much chutzpah and heart behind this thing. It's a great angle on making a video. Fizzleshow.co/80. Listen, please subscribe to this show if you haven't. It helps us out It helps us out a smidge. If you haven't subscribed to the show, have you thought about maybe doing so? I was going to make it rhyme for a little while there, and I decided not to. Oh, I think that was the best choice, because you suck. You know what? That's rude. Sorry, all these voices. Just open up iTunes and search the store for The Fizzle Show. You'll see our eager faces. We've already been there looking for you, just waiting for you to click the button and click subscribe. Maybe write a review while you're there. That'd be awesome. Listen, you're brave. If you're even thinking about finding a different stream or streaming a different thing or paddling against the flow or whatever metaphor we used in this episode, there were several of them. If you've got the itch and you're taking any steps whatsoever, you're already a brave, brave person, and we salute you. You're part of a long line of independent thinkers and self-reliant humans. Find care, take care, serve hard, and dig in. Thanks. And I'll talk to you next Fizzle Friday.